This episode is sponsored in part by InterOptic, a data interconnect company. You can purchase high-performance optics designed by engineers who truly understand what you need at a fraction of the cost. It's time to take control of your optics purchase with InterOptic. InterOptic is at Interop 2018 in Vegas, and you can check them out online at interoptic.com.
Today's episode is brought to you in part by Cumulus Networks. Cumulus Networks is web-scale networking for the digital age. Visit them at www.cumulusnetworks.com.
Welcome to Packet Pushers, the greatest data networking podcast, well, so far. I'm sure one day something better will come along, but for now, it's just us. Now, this week, we're going to have a bit of a more of a controversial push at attacking some of the shibboleths that exist in the industry. About 2 or 3 months ago, it was my decision to let my CCIE emeritus status expire, and I posted a blog post just to explain my positioning on that, and then somebody over on Reddit took umbrage, and there was a big, long discussion and a very exciting thread with lots of intelligent discussion going on Reddit, of course. And what I did was challenged a couple of people out of that group to come and join us. So two people are with us today, Mike Fryer and Chris Kluker. We'll hear more from them in a minute. And also joining us, because he's got a dog in this hunt, is Jeremy Philibin. So let's just kick off the discussion today and talk a little bit about, I let my CCIE status go because it suits me at a personal level. I've got no commentary about the relevance of the CCIE program going forward. For me, it's just my position in life as a host of this podcast and the business that we run here. It just doesn't seem to make sense for me to continue doubling down on that effort. Now, Chris, you had a few things to say that you felt that certification was overvalued, or do you still feel that way now a couple of months later?
Yeah, so I feel that a combination of certification education is definitely has some value, but certifications on their own right have definitely taken a decline in recent times. 10 years ago, you could be very confident in certification status, and if the individuals that you needed to hire for that position had those certifications, you could be confident in their ability to execute on those tasks. Mm. But more recently, it's more hit and miss whether the certifications even cover the information body of knowledge that would be required to do that, and whether or not, quite frankly, those tests were even taken. Honestly.
Well, I mean, the idea of gaming the exam has been around forever, but I think it's more that the industry potentially has changed. Do you think with the arrival of SDN and the shift to the public cloud, we're seeing much more complicated firewalls, we're seeing a simplification of data center networks to just a handful of switches. Isn't it fair to say that the industry's changed, and so maybe the skills of people who achieve their certifications over time haven't kept up? They personally haven't kept them up?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case. If you're talking about the networking guy who spent 25 years rack and stacking access closets of thousands of patch ports versus, the guy who came out of college 6 months ago and he's just spent the last 2 or 3 years learning how to develop software networking, those are vastly different skill sets that are going to apply vastly differently in current networking environment.
So, Mike, what do you think about the current state of skill sets in the industry? Do you think networking people generally have the capability to do what's needed today?
I think it's a struggle. I mean, finding people with the specific skill set that we need to achieve all the aspects of our daily responsibilities is tough. A certification gives you hopefully an idea of a minimum set of qualifications that they have, but ultimately, it's not about certifications, right? You're looking for skills. You're looking for qualifications. And the IT worker is required to deliver such a vast number of skills today with overlapping concepts and vastly different requirements that finding someone who meets all those is generally cost prohibitive. So it's a balance.
So are you looking for people who've actually just got, I've done this thing, I can do spanning tree, I can do routing protocols, or are you looking for people with the right attitude? So you're a senior architect for a largish sized organization in the real world. Are you looking for people with the right attitude, or are you looking for people with the right knowledge sets?
Well, both. I'll give you an example. I have a young man. He has an engineering degree, master's. He doesn't have any IT certifications, but he interned here. He's got a good attitude. He's very, very bright. I cannot put him autonomously on basic MACD changes for daily network operational tasks. He doesn't have the wherewithal to, you know, configure a switch port, you know, for a user or a server or otherwise, or basic IP routing. Now I can give him a script and just say, okay, just plug place these values and rinse and repeat, because we haven't got our full end-to-end automation. We have, you know, got any, you know, I don't have a solution to configure every single switch that I have across the network. We still have to reconfigure switch ports at remote offices for cameras or printers or whatever else. And he's got to understand what a VLAN is and what an IP address is, yeah, and all those different things. And the engineering degree didn't really cover that. Right, he can think.
Still doing the same things as we did 25 years ago, but doesn't mean that everybody knows how to do those things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And maybe, you know, 5 years from now, maybe you know, once whatever the iteration of the I'm sure there's a solution that exists to that. I don't have it deployed yet. Operational budget, I haven't rationalized it to my accounting team, I haven't sold it to my solutions review board. Certainly haven't deployed it, mm-hmm, after all those things. So for at least the near term, mm-hmm, I still need someone who provisions switch ports.
So certifications would help you. If somebody turned up with a, you know, an appropriate mid-level vendor certification, you know, the result of a couple of hundred hours of classroom time and a couple of hundred hours of self-study time, you know, all up, maybe 8 weeks of professional development, that'd be the person that you'd rather have.
It's a barrier to entry, right? It's a course filter. However many people apply, I can use that to gather a list of people worthy of my time to look at and spend time with and see if they have the right attitude and are someone I want to work with, you know, and so on and so forth.
But the flip side of that is somebody who's got 5 years of CLI skills isn't likely to be ready for an SDN era. They might be fully prepared to keep artisanally handcrafting their CLI configs or doing the copy-paste that they've done for the last X period of time instead of moving forward as the technology changes. The challenge I have with certifications is that quite often they teach you a way to do it. This is the way the hammer's going to hit the nail, not why the hammer hits the nail, right? If you're trying to build a piece of furniture, you can just copy the instructions and build a chair. It's like going to IKEA and thinking that because I can assemble a chair from IKEA, I'm now a furniture maker. And in fact, the real process about making a chair from a piece of wood with an appropriate tool shed is a vastly different enterprise. And that's my point is CLI networking is largely about an IKEA thing. You've got this very limited set of tools. You don't have to understand a whole lot. It only takes a few hundred hours to learn it. And then they can let you go wild on a network worth, you know, with multi-million dollar impacts if it fails.
Well, so let me frame it a little bit differently, yeah. And I think you might be thinking of the old CLI script. I'm literally thinking about level one tasks, you know, and I mitigate my risk of that multi-million dollar thing by letting them only deal with user access switches at a remote office versus data center stuff, you know, for the first year or two. But one of our other MACD changes, what I consider a standard service request, it's not a major change, is installing a new load balancer VIP, you know. Again, at some point that will probably be automated. Today, it's not, at least not here. You know, listening on port 80 and doing a monitor on whether a server is up and what load balancing mechanism. The requester of the service doesn't understand necessarily what it does. They're expecting the network guy to explain that. And so, you know, a basic, I don't know, an entry-level F5 certification would help me know or understand that guy is and knows what a node is and knows what a health monitor is and those kinds of things. You know, I mean, certifications, again, they establish a minimum baseline that I use as a barrier to entry.
In addition to that, though, they show a bunch of qualities that I think are important, even if we drop all the technical parts of this. I mean, they show a level of persistence, of somebody willing to put in the time and the effort to achieve, you know, what is, you know, for the CCIE especially, which is a difficult goal to achieve. I look at it as a level of peak performance as well. You know, on one day or 2 days, if you're old like me and took a 2 day CCIE lab, you know, that person met a significant challenge and a, you know, a time pressure and, you know, without any resources available to them other than, you know, a simple documentation CD, they were able to build a network that, you know, had somebody certify them as an expert in this field. the ability to learn quickly, and I'm sorry, to learn, you know, persistently over an amount of time. You know, those are qualities that a CCIE has to have, or at least had at one point in their life.
Well, and that's the same case that you make for any degree, right? But the problem is brick and mortar colleges today can't keep up with the rate of change and the churn in IT. So certificates or certifications, right? You know, they're more dynamic. They aren't bound by the, you know, Department of Education, you know, curriculum, you know, that takes years and years to evolve, right?
So, I mean, on that topic of certifications evolving, I recently, early 2017, completed MCSE Cloud Platform and Infrastructure. And that, for example, was an exam that, or I guess a set of exams, that while I was studying, the objectives kept changing. And I already feel now, working within the Azure environment, at least, that a lot of that knowledge that I spent, you know, a lot of my own personal time getting ready for is already more or less obsolete. And this is only, this is probably 13 months since I sat the most recent of those exams. We're in a time now that information is evolving fast enough that for some of the more niche knowledge sets, that those certifications aren't even going to necessarily hold their value for even a year.
Oh, that. But I mean, in fairness, that's always been the case. I mean, I'm a Stratacom expert, but I don't know the last time that was useful either.
You got some Novell network back there?
You know, I don't go to Novell, but I had the books. I just never read them.
I still have an 18th certificate.
I once had a, back in my day, I was still at college and I was actually studying 3PlusShare, which is the 3Coms copy of Microsoft's LAN Manager. And it was obsolete, but that's what college was teaching us. Was that useful when I started to learn Novell NetWare a year later? You bet it was. But, you know.
And that's kind of the key, right? If the certification program is specific to how to, you know, click on menus in some Microsoft application or the specific CLI commands to configure ATM, that knowledge is going to disappear pretty quickly. Or it's going to disappear, but it's also going to become pretty much valueless. If it's core fundamentals, you know, how the IP protocol works, what TCP is, you know, what a routing protocol is and how it works, those fundamentals are going to stick with you. The fundamentals are worth getting. But I guess the question comes back to, why are you getting a certification in the first place? If it's to become an expert on a particular product, then, you know, that's going to be a short-lived value. Hopefully, you can cash in real quick with a job or consulting assignment that aligns with it. Or maybe you got lucky and you picked something that has legs.
But see, I mean, the same thing happens to apprentice electricians and apprentice plumbers. Sure. They do 3 or 4 years of... You know, your average plumber or electrician gets more training than a network engineer does, or a so-called network professional. They'll spend 4 years in a certified program of apprenticeship. They'll spend, I think last time I checked, over the 4 years, they'll spend 6 weeks each year. I guess it varies from place to place. But they'll spend 24 weeks out of those 4 years in training courses and passing exams. And our networking professionals don't get anywhere near that level of education, both on and off the job.
I don't feel like, Greg, I don't feel like that is a fair apples-to-apples comparison. I can't dispute it on the length of time, and I think that highlights an overall gap in that more traditional and established fields outside of IT do a much better job of continuing education and recertification than I think we do. Yes, your certificate expires, but I don't think there's a great mechanism for continued education. Part of that extra training that plumbers and electricians go to is to keep up with new regulations.
Yeah.
It's instructional. It's required by regulation. If you're going to keep your license, then you go and you sit and you understand these new regulations. And then you take a test to demonstrate that you understood the changes, that you got value out of this, you know, course that you had to attend.
Yeah.
Where IT, you know, your certification expires, you're wholly on your own to go and research. The requirements are sometimes vague and ambiguous. The subject matter is vast. I don't feel like it's a fair apples comparison.
I mean, that's where Packet, at the end of the day, this is where Packet Pushers came from, right? We were out on the field. This is where Ethan and I started the podcast. We were out in the field. There's no place to learn except for what the vendors deign to share with you. And it's all marketing content. You know, it's all got a marketing value attached to it. You know, white papers, technical documentation. And so we started the podcast as a way of staying educated and up to date and to relieve the, and for me personally, it was to relieve the loneliness. Networking, as a networking professional who was always working alone, there was always just me. And part of it was that. So the whole point of Packet Pushers is to keep yourself professionally developed.
The comparison I think is better is something like an athlete or a musician, someone whose value is constantly validated in the market because of their performance, either on the field or you know, I guess in the concert hall. Mm. That's the comparison that I've always used for my career. Not that I aspire to be a musician or anything, but mm-hmm. it just makes more sense to me. You know, I need to constantly work on my skills to keep my value the same or better relative to the others that are looking for roles, you know, the same mm-hmm. roles that I have. Like a free agent sort mm-hmm. of, you know, even though, you know, I primarily work for enterprises my mm-hmm. career, I think that's the better mindset.
I want to add two points from my own personal history experience that I feel like are relevant here. Number one, when I was 19 years old, long before I ever even thought about going into IT as a field, I took a summer job with the City Department of Health spraying mosquitoes. Before I could do that, they had a requirement for me to go get my vermin control license, and I had to take a test to get certified to deploy pesticides, you know, for example. It wasn't very hard, you know, it was a little bit of light reading. The test I thought was very, very simple, but it came with a continuing education requirement where every year or 2 years I had to go, I had to spend, I forget if it was 2 hours or 8 hours in a class, and then I had to take a test validating that I'd participate in the class and I could keep that license. Same thing. As I got older, once I turned to my early 20s, I got a commercial driver's license and drove for a trucking firm for a little while. To recertify your driver's license, and you're demonstrating that you are aware of laws that have changed relevant to your field and profession. In IT, I think the subject matter is much more difficult than my vermin control license and my pesticide license, and certainly a lot harder than my CDL.
I don't know. Vermin control sounds familiar. I spend an awful lot of time hunting bugs in my networks. I don't know about you. Vermin control sounds exactly like it.
but I say that to say, you know, like in accounting, we have ITIL certified people, and every year they go to a conference and they have they don't even have to recertify. They have to demonstrate X number of hours of continuing education. Mm. And if they go to a conference, it's not Cisco Live, but similar. Mm-hmm. You know, once a year, that satisfies their, you know, 30 hours or 40 hours or whatever.
That's an interesting one. Now, that used to happen in years gone by. It was a possibility to do continuous education and to attend events. But it was actually vendor customers who canned that. CIO said, why am I sending away my highly expensive resources and I'm forced to send them because of what you do, and I don't want to keep paying for them and they leave at exactly the time when I need them most. We demand that you take it away. That's exactly where it went.
And the CISSP does a similar thing with continuing education, and I don't know anybody who likes that. I mean, generally, the whole idea of licensing, and this my libertarian point of view is going to come out here, but the whole idea of licensing is to restrict competition for employment within that field. I mean, there's the secondary need of making sure folks are capable, but you know, you see the funny articles about, you know, people get arrested because they cut hair because they didn't have a hairdresser's license. You know, it's usually just a point of restriction, and you know, I certainly don't want to live in a networking world that's trying to do the same.
So what you're saying is the fact that the reason that a lot of taxi regulation exists is so that criminals aren't driving taxis.
There's that, and there's to restrict the number of taxis that can operate in an area.
That came later. The original idea behind it was that there was a number of taxi drivers who were predators, and using it for crime, you know, to take people and beat them up and mug them, or to attack women or other nefarious activities. And by licensing the drivers, that restricted that activity. And then later on, that was corrupted into, as you say, controlling the market to justify,
right.
Yeah, to that. But the original intention was to do something that was good. Any system's corruptible.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But
you could look at vendor certification programs, which have become corrupted. So many people using cheats and dumps and looking for ways to get around them because they just want to get the money that's on the other side of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly possible. You know, I mean, that certainly happens, and that's unfortunate.
It's a hard problem to solve. I don't think there's a binary answer. Kind of going back to my original point, the presence of a certification is a, you know, it might be a barrier to entry to give me a course filter. If I get 1,000 applicants, I need a way to pare them down. If I only get 2 applicants, then maybe I go back and look at my requirements and say, you know what, let me get rid of this requirement for certification to see who I get in here. That's market dynamics, right? But then once I decide to make time to interview that candidate, it's up to me to vet their qualifications and root out the paper tigers, right?
And that, I mean, that's the key, right? So kind of getting back to the question of why certifications, right? From an individual point of view, it's a signal. It's a signal that I'm capable of doing something, or at least was at the time I passed the exam. You know, from an employment perspective, it gets me past a set of filters that have been erected. So you kind of have to play the game, right?
So let's take the flip side of this. If I'm a IT manager and I'm looking to recruit a networking person, I may not have networking skills. I mean, obviously, Mike, you do, and you can look past the paper certification and decide who's the right person to hire. But if I'm an IT manager, I'm looking at the vendor certification as a certificate of competency and capability, and therefore I should be able to trust the vendor has actually delivered on the promise that they've given me. So in theory, those certifications should have some due diligence and some qualification and some, you know, because the promise is that if you hire this person, they'll have those skills, and the vendors aren't necessarily honoring that.
That's a tough one, man. I'll be completely honest with you. What I see is that most of the IT managers, and certainly their HR, you know, counterparts that put all the requirements together, they don't have a good skill map of this certification maps to this competency. And you know, if you've seen the latest global knowledge map for every single Cisco certification, you know, CCDA, CCNA, you know, voice specialist, collaboration specialist, cloud specialist, all these different things. Go to your HR person or your IT manager and have them articulate the differentiation between a cloud manager, a route switch guy, and you know, whatever else. Disputing your point, I don't know exactly what I'm saying. The point is, what you're looking for is a mapping of certification to competency, and you're looking for some list. Yeah. You know, this is the skill that I have. What certification do I need to get that? Who the heck knows?
So I kind of want to back this away a little bit from the individual certifications themselves, because there's obviously going to be, you know, route switch versus, you know, firewall configuration versus
VPN configuration.
Precisely. And all of those are very task-oriented. This is how you perform this specific function. But I want to give a little bit of attention to the more broader education scope, where you've got really a field that consists of degrees, diplomas, certifications, direct industry experience, and sort of more apprenticeship type training. And across that broad range, I mean, there are probably even some more, but across those 5 sort of pillars of typical methods of training and education and self-promotion and recognition. I mean, from sort of left to right, you've got specific certifications that, you know, basically state that I know how to work with this specific equipment or software or whatever the certification states that you know. And then you've got sort of more a diploma type approach that says, you know, I know generally in this field how to work with these types of technologies.
Yeah. I know the right way to hold a hammer.
Yep, absolutely. I know the right way to hold a hammer. I know how to put a hammer on a wall and the little outline that has the shape of a hammer.
Yeah.
And then you've got sort of more degrees that haven't ever actually held a hammer, but you understand the purpose of a hammer. You understand
the metallic composition of the head, and that there's there are many different types of metal that define whether a hammer is strong or weak. But you don't know how to use a hammer.
Precisely. You understand sort of the more abstract concepts about it, but also fundamentally, you understand how on your own to go out and seek out that knowledge. The core teaching, if you go out and receive a 4-year degree, is they're teaching you how to learn, not necessarily the content itself. Yes, of course, that's important, but the core aspect of a degree is how to learn, as opposed to being taught how to do something in a typical diploma. And then following that on with sort of, you know, apprenticeship style teaching, where it's not only about how to teach yourself, it's about how to teach the next generation and have them sort of follow in your footsteps and continue to conduct your trade. And that last one there, I think, is sorely lacking in IT, in that there really isn't a, I'm not going to say mandate, but there isn't an accepted industry culture of wanting to pass down information both within your organization and without. Of course, podcasts and stuff like that are a large contribution towards that effort. But I can't go to the street and put up a job posting and say, you know, I'm looking for a CCNA with 2 years experience, and have candidates come back that I know are going to have worked on equipment in sort of a role where somebody was working with them and supervising their activities and teaching and more importantly, molding those sort of best practices of doing things. I can teach you how to do CLI. I can teach how to plug in a cable. I can teach you how to write a firewall ACL. I can't teach people.
Yeah, but those things are trivial things. They're not advanced things. Like,
right, and that's just
here's
my point.
Here's the angry end of a hammer. Here's the how do you hold a hammer? Now hit that nail. That's not hard, right?
As an IT manager, I don't want to hire somebody I have to teach. I want to hire somebody who wants to figure this stuff out on their own and learn. But maybe I'm different.
Teach a man to fish. Yeah.
You want to externalize their capabilities, right? Which I think goes into a much bigger, you know, philosophical debate or political debate on, do we need to prepare the workforce to be able to do work, or do enterprises have some responsibility to invest and cultivate?
Yeah, maybe I was a little flippant with what I said, but what I meant was, I want somebody who's a self-starter who's going to want to learn these things. I don't want to hire people that I have to, you know, point at the switchboard and say, plug it in.
I think what I'm hearing is you want someone that you can extract value from right away, right?
Not necessarily. So the organization I work with, we have a college development program where we bring folks in who, you know, have no practical experience, right? We are their first real job in networking or in IT. And many of those, individuals have gone on to be great contributors to my company or to other companies if they decide to leave. But the difference between those who are successful and those who aren't successful coming out of that program are the ones who are looking to learn. You know, you mentioned, hey, we've got some Cisco switches, and within a week they've read, you know, as much as they can on what a Cisco switch does and is and how to configure it, and ask for a lab switch and get to work. The ones that don't succeed are the ones who say, well, tell me how to configure that, and they kind of sit there and wait for instructions.
Well, hold on. Which model and which method of QoS?
Well, exactly. I mean, but isn't that the key? The folks that are able to educate themselves to the point to ask that question, or that's a huge marker of success.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Do you expect them to go and read the configuration guide for every single model you have and every single version of software that you have? Or are you okay with, at the point of execution, when I touch this device, I need to go to the technical manual and research
sure.
This is how I do that task, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I'm not expecting...
Which one do you certify, right?
Yeah.
Both?
I'm not expecting...
Do you need that certification to a model or a version of software? Or do you leave it more abstract? And I think we're intersecting at where the problem is in the industry, right? And what phase of your career. The certifications are supposed to be telling a story about an individual, but the conversation is too vast and too ambiguous for a certification to really answer it effectively for everybody.
Hey, listeners, this is Drew from the Packet Pushers, taking a few seconds from the podcast to talk to you about one of today's sponsors, Interoptic. Demand from the edge, 5G, and IoT are coming. If you're not doing optics correctly, you're going to pay for it later. Interoptic understands you're going to need a more nimble layer zero, and they support the full range of products you need today and don't yet know you'll need tomorrow. Layer zero is more important than ever, so learn how to spec your optics so your network environment can scale with your bandwidth demands. Stop paying OEM prices for optics and start talking to the optics experts who deliver brand-equivalent transceivers at a fraction of the price. And don't be fooled by lesser optics. The difference between generic, third-party, and brand-equivalent optics matters. You can purchase the same, if not better-performing optics at a fraction of the cost. And they're designed by engineers who truly understand what you need. It's time to take control of your optics purchase with InterOptic. You can visit InterOptic at InterOp 2018 in Vegas to learn how they can help you spec the right optics for your custom network environment, and find out more today at interoptic.com. Now back to the podcast.
Yeah, for my team that I work with, about half have their CCNA, and I encourage them all to get it, but not everybody wants to put the effort into they go through a certification program. But the I've found that the CCNA program, Cisco's entry-level program, is a pretty good proxy for the types of skills that candidates need, whether we use Cisco switches or not, or Cisco routers or whatever it might be. You learn those fundamentals that you just need in our field, like subnetting and like basic routing protocols and understanding what a routing protocol does and how it does it. I mean, that's the sort of program that I expect folks to go through. Now, if they want to get certified on specific devices or equipment that we have as well, you know, maybe get into wireless and you know, get certified on the wireless equipment that we use, that makes sense, and I support it 100%. But I mean, there's no requirement to get certified.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I second that. Cisco, I think, has a very robust certification program compared to other alternatives that I see. We frequently send people to Cisco training, even though we have a huge installed base of Nokia gear that is dedicated to a component architecture that doesn't have much Cisco gear in it at all, if any. But the concepts that are covered by the CCNA are very transferable to the concepts that are done by the on the Nokia gear, but the execution is totally different. They're not in any way even remotely similar, but the concepts and the content are very, very good.
Have any of you looked at what Juniper's doing with its day one manuals on how to use Juniper routers and how it learns stuff? Have you seen those?
I haven't looked at Juniper's specific certification and their hardware in about 3 or 4 years.
So Juniper publishes a whole bunch of books called In the Day One Library, and they're I would put it to you that anybody who can take the time to work through, and they're all free to download from Juniper's website, or you can find them for a couple of bucks each up on iBooks and Amazon, Kindle. And if you can work your way through, you know, their data center fundamentals or deploying basic QoS, or in fact, the book that they've got, Hardware Defined Network, I'll tell you, it's just amazing. It's the best textbook I've ever read. I'm all over it at the moment. They're just fantastic. I think you could just teach people to read those and they'd come out of that with a CCNA, probably, you know, a mid-level competency in networking without any need for training.
But how do you know they did it unless they passed the test?
Well, sure. What you just told me is you know that they're going to be doing stuff. Why should they pass the test? You should be able to judge them by their effectiveness on the tool, shouldn't you?
I agree. I mean, for those that I've already hired, yeah, you know, it doesn't much matter anymore. But if they want to get that next job, they're not going to pass the filter. Right.
Have a blog post. Get blogs posts up there showing your competency is my view.
I'll say, Greg,
do those certifications even still apply when you start talking about much higher level industry work jobs? You know, if those employees you're talking about are potentially moving to, you know, another second level or third level technical support job as opposed to, you know, design or architecture or engineering level positions, do you feel that those certifications are going to continue to add value much later on in their careers or much higher up in their careers?
Let me put it this way. I got my CCA about 20 years ago, and when I got it, I had no expectation that 20 years later it would still be valuable. Now, fortunately, it has been for me. We can talk about that in a moment. you know, having that Cisco certification has continued to be valuable. But I could very well have become a 3Com Wizard or a Nortel, whatever, Bay Networks.
Funny you should mention the 3Com Wizard. I was heartbroken when I missed out on that. And they made me go and do the CCIE program back in the day. Yeah. I really wanted to do it. Yeah.
But if, I mean, if I had pursued that, right, the designation's no longer valuable, but the things that I learned, or at least the subset of things that weren't 3Com specific, would still be valuable in my career. But I think you can't get a certification today and expect it to be a 20-year part of your resume. So many of my certifications have dropped off. I've just been very fortunate that the first one I got was the CCIE, and that one, you know, there's still a lot of value in leaving that certification on the resume.
And the question's sort of going in a different direction. The question is not, you know, is a CCNA going to be valuable to me in 20 years? The question is more, is, insert arbitrary mid-level certification here, even going to be relevant as a filter attribute for, you know, director level positions?
That's fair. If you change what you're attempting to do in terms of your professional career, then certainly the list or mix of certifications or markers on your resume is going to change. But I look at it this way. If I have an employee or somebody I work with or a colleague that has the skills to pass a certification exam, I kind of think it's foolish not to, because, you know, what does it hurt? It's a couple $100, you know, you take a test, maybe you take it twice, you at least decide if it's for you.
So it sounds like everybody agrees that CCNA and CCNP, or the entry level and the mid-level certifications, have value. And Jeremy, you obviously have a training program where you help people pass through the Cisco CCDE program.
Right.
So the question is really, do the elite programs, do they have value in a world which is changing? So as we've seen the rise of public cloud, as we've seen the rise of hyperconverged, so we're seeing companies actively go out and buy converged solutions from companies like Nutanix and Dell's VxRails and Cisco, HPE SimpliVity and Cisco's converged solutions. You don't get a choice about which networking you have in your data center. You get what they give you as part of these converged solutions. Where does that leave you with the expert certifications? Do the expert certifications lose their value going forward?
If you view them as a product certification, then sure, right? You know, the CCIE, whatever, security, that's always the one I like to pick on, because CCIE security is more of a point-in-time product certification as compared to something like a route switch or a service provider CCIE or the design expert that I teach for, which are a little more timeless because they're core protocols or core network design elements. If you look at them as a product certification, then for sure they become less valuable over time. My apologies to anybody who has those for having said it. But I see that. I go back to something I said earlier, which is if you have your CCIE or your CCD, it shows a level of competence, you know, of excellence, really, at a point in time that shows what that individual's peak performance is, and you know they were able to. You know, I look at it like somebody who was able to run a marathon at some point in the past. You know, it doesn't mean they can drop everything and run 26 miles right now, but they have the persistence and, in that case, the level of fitness or ability to get the level of fitness to be able to achieve that goal. A long-term, multi-month, if not multi-year goal of achieving something. And I think there's a ton of value in using that to weed out those who can from those who can't.
Let's take a short break from our show to talk about our sponsor, Cumulus Networks. Gartner now states that 40% of global enterprises will have a web-scale networking initiative by 2020. Cumulus Networks brings web-scale networking to the digital age by providing you with all the tools you need to affordably build and efficiently operate your network like the world's largest data centers. Now, maybe those numbers don't get you too excited, so think about Cumulus this way. You're getting two core products with Cumulus Networks. One is Cumulus Linux, and this is an open network operating system you run on a white box switch that gives you layer 2 and layer 3 features you'd expect, plus the ability to manage a switch like you would any Linux box. that's where they're getting those 60% TCO reduction and 75% efficiency increase numbers from. Plus, Cumulus Online documentation is very good, and you get traditional support options as well as a Slack group, plus Cumulus VX. This is a virtual version of Cumulus Linux that you can build labs out of for proof of concept testing or just getting to know the NOS. The second core product of Cumulus is NetQ. Cumulus calls NetQ, quote, a telemetry-based fabric validation system, quote. In other words, you use NetQ to make sure that your configuration is working as expected and to troubleshoot issues as they come up, even issues that happened in the past. You get to look at the entire network from the host all the way through to the switches, and you get information that you can do something with. In other words, action items, something that will improve network operations. If Cumulus is interesting to you, read Cumulus's top 10 basic Linux administration tips by heading over to cumulusnetworks.com/10tips for pod and learn how Linux can improve your data center network. And now, back to our show.
One thing in response to what Greg was saying about Juniper, Juniper is still very network centric, you know, with a specific, you know, OEM vendor in mind. I really like the CompTIA certifications. I have my A+, I have my N+, good, general, non-proprietary, you know, vendor agnostic certifications that are definitely high level and conceptual. They also have some very specific instructions on how to achieve, you know, the tasks that they're geared towards, right? Somewhat entry level at that stage. The N+ doesn't tell you how to do overlay networks or anything like that. but that was one comment I wanted to make. But the other, you know, Windows has the MCSE certifications that are good for one version of software, and you have to renew it on the next version of server or desktop software. I don't know of a whole lot of other vendors that do. You know, Cisco certainly doesn't say, you know, your CCIE is only good for this, you know, model of router or software. Or at least the way I was kind of interpreting what you were saying is, the expert delineates a level of expertise with a product at that point in time, and that expertise degrades over time as the product changes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you view it as a product certification, but if you view it as an accomplishment, right, as something that an individual is able to achieve at a point in time, you know, they may abandon networking and 10 years later, you know, then. You know, certainly the skills have deteriorated, but if they've continued to maintain their CCIE by going through the recertification program, at a minimum, they're still a reasonably expert level-ish, if that's a word, on one of the tracks, because that's a requirement of the recertification program every 2 years with Cisco.
Well, that's one of the things about the CCIE, right, is the lab tests you in a time-sensitive manner on how to execute these commands. But as soon as those commands and the syntax and verbiage changes with the next version, you know, the adding of a hyphen or an extra keyword that you can tab out on question, I'm talking about the difference between BGP address families and the legacy mechanism, right?
You know, I take a different viewpoint on that. I mean, absolutely, there's a specific set of commands that are eligible to be on any specific CCIE lab based on whatever version of code you're running and the types of equipment that need to be configured. But it's not as simple as recognizing this is the BGP part of my lab and I need to, you know, virtually cut and paste the things that are in my brain that say BGP on them. There's a significant level of understanding. In fact, that's probably the most important part of the CCIE program is being able to understand the requirements and then implement them using the configuration. So, you know, you may have to, you know, memorize isn't the right word because you have access to a documentation CD, but you need to effectively memorize, you know, several thousand commands, but you don't type in several thousand commands. You have to be able to winnow that down to the correct commands to make the exact configuration possible that's being requested of you at that moment.
And then you get into the argument about that being pointless education. What's the point in learning all of those, you know, things just to be able to do the day-to-day job where it's not very relevant? I mean, so much of what we do as so-called networking professionals is learnt on the job.
Didn't your teachers ever teach you that you won't always have a calculator and you have to know how to do math in your head?
I mean, there's some level of, you know, it's just table stakes to be able to configure Cisco routers, right? I mean, whether it was, you know, point and click through for Cisco voice or type specific commands, I mean, that's just the tools that we use to let our instructor or our proctor know that we understand this technology, right? It's the language that we use. You know, knowing English isn't sufficient to be able to write, you know, a book, but it's, you know, it's table stakes, right?
I wanted to make one point to challenge what you said before. You made the comment on the CCIE, you know, the documentation is there available for you. And I think you're technically correct, but I think that if you have to go back to it, you're probably going to fail.
And you probably won't have even time to complete.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you need to know most of it. You can look up a small percentage of it during your exam time.
Yeah.
But I mean, just to, and maybe we're going to just disagree, but the CCIE program is not about memorizing commands. I mean, that's a function of it or
no,
a part of it?
No, definitely not. That's a part of it. Right. And again, I think that's the difference. When you say expert, and I think what Greg is saying is when a non-networking IT manager is trying to fill a gap on his team, when he's trying to fill a function, he is trying to purchase a level of aptitude that's, you know, demonstrated by a certificate. And when you say expert, that means you can drop in this network and configure complex routing protocols and NAT and redistribution, all these different things in a matter of hours. You've been tested. Right. But as the syntax changes, as the GUI changes, as those different things change, that competency fades. And these days it seems to be fading faster than ever as things are changing. Yeah.
And the vendor is attesting in the certification that this competency has been reached. Inherently, when they issue a certificate that's been backed with Cisco's brand, they're actually attesting that the person has achieved a level of competency. And that's something that Cisco's responsibility in issuing these certificates has to be considered here. Most people give them a free ride and say, oh, you know, it's just up to the person, but it's not.
Yeah, I agree that the specific commands and such do fade. But, you know, if someone continues to work at their craft of networking, the concepts of address translation and routing protocols aren't going to fade. I mean, unless they go into some other component of networking, security or something like that. But I think that expectation that you set, or at least you suggested that hiring manager set, is a little unrealistic, that somebody could drop in to a network and hit the ground running in hours, right? There's a level of understanding that needs to take place that probably takes weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of my comment earlier. I can tell you, in a financial industry, even when we hired tier three, you know, operation support engineers, it was kind of accepted amongst the team that it was a 6 to 8 month, you know, return on investment by the time that they were really fully competent to be wholly autonomous without some type of an oversight from someone who had been on the team for a while, even if technically the new person was more competent and had more qualifications or credentials than the guy had been there.
Yep. Yeah, you're 100% right about that. I work with a company that hired a 4X expert level certification individual. And I mean, he's an incredible engineer, but it takes time to get up to speed and know the implications of the changes you're making. You know, the syntax is not a challenge at all. It's the holistic view of the environment that takes time.
Business.
Yeah.
You need to understand the business. And when the business asks you a question, you need to understand it in the context of the person asking it, who has this role, who has this history. You know, people aren't very good at speaking tech, so we have to translate on their behalf.
Well, that is, you know, not to do a sell job here, but that's what the CCDE program is about. It's bridging that gap between the technical and the business side, which is kind of an interesting place to be, especially with the way things have been going in our industry.
And Greg, I definitely learned something from you with the Juniper Day One documents. Is there something else non-Cisco that's comparable to CCDE?
Juniper has an architecture thing. I'm not too sure. I am much these days now, obviously, you know, as we come back around onto where we started off with the podcast, when we the reason that I'm letting my CCI emeritus status go is because I realize I'm unlikely to go back to my skills of that where the CCIE would be useful. I'm much more likely to go into strategy and design because that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years, and I don't need the certification to do that. So I think people now would be better served instead of working down, and this is a very broad statement, this isn't true for everybody, everybody's situation is unique, and if you're in a situation where you're looking at doing an expert certification, you'll know why you want to do that, so go and do that. But I think generally you're much better off now getting mid-level skills very widely. So you would be better off broadly being, you know, CCNP or whatever the equivalent vendor certification is in other products, the mid-level certification for routing and switching, having some firewall skills, so going getting the version of the mid-level skills for Palo or Fortinet or, you know, Cisco's SourceFire products, whatever they're called this week. You might want to go and get some certifications around load balancing, whether it's A10 or Radware or F5. You might want to get some skills around IPsec VPNs, but I think much more likely you're going to want to get something around SD-WAN. And then you're going to want to get something around some basic business competency. You want to be able to demonstrate that you understand how to do budgeting, how to do good communication skills, how to write reports effectively, because people hire much more on communication skills in an interview, your ability to, and they want to see your writing, they want to see your diagramming skills as much as they want to see your CLI skills for most jobs. And I think as SDN comes through, as the software revolution changes networking away from configuring VLANs, and, you know, over a 10-year career plan that you probably should have, you're much more likely to be doing new things in 5 to 10 years. So you need to be preparing for those. So public cloud, mid-level certifications around the public cloud. You know, if it's AWS, it's Azure, it's Google, it's not, that's not a problem. Go and do those. Get some competency with Python. There's no certificates in Python, so the only place you're going to demonstrate your Python skills is on a blog for a recruiter, for, you know, an employer. That, I think, having much wider skills base is where you want to be for the next 5 to 10 years. I don't think broadly, very broadly, everybody's situation is unique, that being an expert, having a deep I-shaped skill, being an expert in one narrow thing is a good career choice because there's too much change happening. You're better off being wider and broader in your skills base going forward.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It was, you know, 20 years ago when you and I and Ethan, I think I'm dating us right, you know, decided to do the CCIE program. There was not a lot of risk in going deep with Cisco certifications, right? That was the king of the hill. Still probably is, but certainly, you know, even orders of magnitude more at the time. I agree that it's a little riskier to go deep with a specific certification, whether it's Cisco or Juniper or you know, whatever it might be, because things do seem to be changing a little more quickly nowadays.
Now, I think now if you're going to do an expert, you'd be better off doing some public cloud skills first and, you know, fronting up to an employer with a vendor certification in Microsoft, VMware, Cisco, HPE, plus some AWS, Google, Azure is probably more valuable to most people.
So the pushback I'll give you, though, is that, you know, getting certifications in the abstract is extremely difficult, right? If I'm not working with Azure, you know, it's very difficult for me to put the time and effort in to actually get that certification because I'm not doing it during my, you know, 8-to-5 job or whatever it is that I normally work. I'm doing that in the evenings. I can't, you know, double dip in effect and learn on the job.
Is it almost time to return to the land of industry trained corporate sponsored certifications?
So CompTIA, vendor independent, broad ranging, professionally developed, in the same way that lawyers and doctors have to do constant certification and re-education.
I'll just flat out say no. My opinion's no.
Different question. The question is not industry neutral certifications. The question is employer sponsored certification training. It's not the content, but financially paying for the certification paths of their employees.
Well, sure, but if I put my employer hat on, you know, I'm not going to sponsor somebody to learn Azure Cloud if we're using AWS, right? But I'll spend all the money in the world if it aligns with what we're doing.
That's not unlike, you know, I'm in an enterprise business and we have an educational reimbursement. You know, the company will pay for you to get a degree insofar as it is relevant to your field. You know, they're not going to, you know, finance you to get a degree in painting if your job isn't legal. You know, and it's obviously subject to manager approval. But I think the point that Chris and Greg are making is that, and I think that I agree with, I think that the employer has to be willing to make some type of investment in knowing what skills are required to be successful in their network and investing in cultivating someone who's demonstrated a basic capability. And certifications, are a way to demonstrate some basic capability.
Certifications are a sign you're getting ready to leave your job, usually.
So much earlier in this podcast, the question came out whether you would hire based on certifications or soft skills. At least our company has a demonstrated track record of hiring almost 100% on team fit and soft skills. And, you know, almost having a 15-month to 24-month ramp-up period where we internally invest in training and education and, paired programming isn't really the appropriate term because that's more of a software development term, but job shadowing type training.
Your job shadowing, mentorship, one-on-one. Right. Yeah.
Right. And we're definitely willing to put in that time and money to develop and promote those skills definitely from within. And it's paid off huge for us. We haven't lost an employee in 10 years.
So for Ethan and Greg, who both have let their CCIEs go within the last year, I think is right. How do you feel about it? Any relief, sadness, you know, elation? How'd it make you feel?
All of those things, I guess. It was a very difficult cert to obtain, and I had invested a great deal of my time to get that cert and then to maintain it. But it comes a point where the time required to keep up with the level of detail to continue recertifying didn't make a lot of sense for me for what I do these days. And I'm not that Cisco-centric anymore. I mean, keep up with it, of course, but not to the degree that I did where I was operating and maintaining some, not Cisco exclusive by any means, but certainly very Cisco focused routing and switching based networks. So yeah, finally after the third, I was in that zone of recertifying when the exam was at the 5.0 rev, I think, kind of notorious, that designation. It was brutal. And after three attempts of trying to take that exam and realizing I don't even have a plan of how I'm going to pass this thing. I just said this is dumb. I just got to stop now because my life has really moved on. And so that was a sad moment, and even sadder when not a month or more after I kind of gave up and my window went away, 5.1 came out and everyone I spoke to said, oh, it's a much more passable exam than 5.0 was. So I was like, maybe. Maybe had my window been a little different, I might have recertified for another time. But I'm sad to have let it go. But at the same time, it's also elation to see that my career and what I do and the technologies that I focused on have really moved beyond the Cisco focus that I had at one time.
Hmm. So my story is very similar, Jeremy, in that I passed, 17, 18 years ago, and pretty much from the day that I passed, I'd never worked on Cisco equipment very often, in my case, because there was always other people to do it, so mid-level people, and most of the Cisco work wasn't very interesting to me, and I went off and did other technologies, load balancers, proxy engines, Linux, monitoring stuff. And design and negotiations and optimization design and coaching people to do the right thing. So even though I've been working on Cisco Kit for 17 years, very little of that time was spent hands-on working on Cisco gear. I spent most of my time building firewall clusters in working on design and architecture strategies and budgets and stuff. So for me to let it go was a huge sense of relief, because I always had this feeling that I should be keeping it. I should be doing something with it. I worked so hard to get it, but now that it's gone, I actually feel like I can move on. So I'm looking forward to going and doing stuff in a public cloud. I'm looking forward and doing some Python. I'm looking forward to, doing more that just doesn't have that. It just felt like there was something there that I should have done, and it was always on my to-do list to go and get this back up to date or whatever. And now that that chance is gone forever, I really feel liberated, and I don't feel like I have to carry that burden along behind me. So now I can start working on things that matter to a future. And keep in mind, right, I'm older. I'm 52 or 53. I'm 10 to 15 years away from retiring. How much, is this really the sort of job? Am I going to go back? Let's say Packet Push is finished up tomorrow. Where would I go? Would I go back to being a keyboard jockey, artisanally creating command line interfaces? Or am I going to be back into a design and strategy team? And I don't think it'll be the former. I think it would be the latter.
That's a fair point. I mean, most CCIEs that I know of that are kind of keeping it, even if they don't use it day to day, do it for the optionality, for the ability to drop back into the partner world and, get a job that sort of expressly or explicitly values the CCIE. If that's not, anywhere remotely on your potential career path.
I'm never going back to resellers. That was the most miserable job I ever had. All of them. I had several for partners, and it was always miserable and unhappy. Just, your stakeholders, who owns you, that you've got the customer expectations, you've got the project manager expectations, and you've got your employer's expectations, and you've got the employer's sales team and the employer's professional services team. You just don't win in that environment. It's just a miserable existence, and that's not something I'll return to willingly.
Well, I would like to offer the contrasting view to that. I had we'll call it a family friend. He's a little older than me. I think he was 49, so close to your age. Due to an acquisition, his IT department was merged with another one. He ended up back on the street. Career, high paying, he was made redundant. He had not kept up with his certifications in many, many years. He was good at his job, but he didn't have the marketable competencies that transferred really well into today's marketplace. He ended up going back into a level one job and having to go back and re-get, I think, his CCNA to learn how to do basic level one functions. When before he was operating at a much higher level.
Made a mistake then with his personal brand. That gets onto my other favorite rant, which is build a personal brand, have a blog, document stories.
How does that scale? Does everybody have a personal blog? Great, I guess.
If you're a senior or a high
does
level
that become part
person,
of your,
it should be. Because resumes are worthless.
I have to take that as feedback because I don't have a blog.
Yeah, this is how I see it, right? In the old days, you rocked up to somebody, you gave them your resume, and they rang up your referees. But now we know that most companies, when they give you a job reference, won't criticize you. So what happens now is recruiters and employers will ring your referees and ask them, have you got anything bad to say about this person? And if they get nothing, then that reference actually gets thrown in the bin. And if you're looking at someone's resume and you think, maybe they're good, maybe they're not, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to go and look them up on Facebook or see if they've got a blog. And so it's part of your brand it's part of your resume to have a blog where you document things that you've done. Now, you don't give away personal information or information, but you talk about, we had to make a decision and we evaluated these criteria. And maybe you post it 6 months later after the event. Or maybe you say, I learned these, tech notes. I was studying DM, VPN, and crypto, and I, put some tech notes. That shows the person who's employing you something about you, way beyond the certification capability. That's what a certificate is supposed to give you, is to show the person that you've done all these things. But if you've got blog posts out there that show the same thing, you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Greg. It makes a lot of sense to have that personal brand. And that was actually my concern about the direction this podcast might go, is that, that everyone should – I wasn't thinking you would say this, but that potentially would come up that everyone should abandon the certification tracks and build their brand. And that works for some number of people, some subset of people in our industry, but there's a lot of introverts and there's a lot of people who, well, I think we're all introverts to some degree here, but there's a lot of people that that's not the right path for. And, you know, for those folks, certifications are still the best way to demonstrate
competence. I see your point, but I don't think that's the real world anymore. If you can't demonstrate, like if you're an introvert and you don't feel you can be in public, you're not much use to an employer, because how are you going to face down a vendor sales rep if you can't speak in public? How are you going to, if you want to be a senior employee?
That's a manager job. You can't put all that on an engineer. You can't expect everyone to be, you know, out there and be an extrovert. It's just, that's not reality. It doesn't happen like that.
You got to play to your strengths, and I can't wait till we do the closing and you catch me being in violation of everything you just said, because I don't have a Twitter. I don't have a Facebook. I'm not on LinkedIn.
I'm not suggesting that you have a Twitter. I'm just saying.
In contact with me that I basically reached out to in the roles of my function. I don't put my personal info out there. I use my company email up until the point that I leave that company. Mm.
See, I've always got one eye on the door, but then I've been freelancing since 2001, and I've been working.
You know what? I do too, but I do it through personal networking, I guess. You know,
do you live in a smallish town or a smallish state?
Dallas, Texas.
I don't know what that is.
It's a hot job market, I guess.
Yeah, it's one of the 10 largest cities in the United States. So.
Oh, okay.
And fastest growing in the United States right now, I believe. Hmm.
Wait until the market turns down and then you'll find the real world. Maybe. I've experienced that a few times. So I used to freelance in London, in Australia and in London in the peak of the booms, and people couldn't wait to get their hands on you. And then the market turned, and then it was like the rates dropped from, you know, 5%, 10%, 30%, 40%, 50%. And all of a sudden it wasn't worth doing, you know, became very difficult to make it worthwhile.
I remember it well. I took about a 45% haircut in a project that I was working on just midway through. No joke. I mean, they cut my rate 40% and like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Nothing.
And I found that's what the rates are. And the reason that I talk, my personal experience with having the blog is I agree with everything that you guys said about it. It's very scary. It's very difficult. It can be emotionally challenging. But I tell you, when you've sat in front of Cisco sales reps who sit there and say to your face, I don't like you, you're not doing what I want you to do, so I'm going to get you fired. Blogging is nothing.
I can't say much to that other than kind of a comment with the CCI lab test. I feel like my metal has been tested, you know, and trade floor outages where, you know, downtime is measured in tens of thousands, depending on who you listen to, right? Equities guys, their logic's always a little fuzzy, but how do you effectively test someone's metal? I don't know.
Going back, that was the CCIE program as well. But the difference is, if you do it at the CCIE lab, Cisco will say you did it. You know, if you do it at your employer, and then you ask for a reference for the next job, you know, probably not going to go to bat for you like Cisco.
So again, the only way you can do that is to put it out in public and be judged. Yeah. That's where blogging, you know, you don't have to publish every month or every week. You just have to put some, you know, wrap it up and summarize it. I mean, if you're a legal professional or something, like if you go for a job, even now, if you go to Google or any of the major Silicon Valley, they'll expect you to do exactly that, to show your work. If you want to become a coder at Google, you have to sit through a bunch of exams demonstrating that you can code. Why not? It's the same game.
But they don't expect you to have a blog with it, do they?
They'll find you because of the blog, and then they'll evaluate the content on the blog before they approach you. Yes.
And I don't want to be more specific, but one of my colleagues also just recently applied for some certifications, which she has obtained, and blog content was definitely part of the review process.
Or GitHub.
Well, I'll be pointing to this podcast if you guys put it on the air, and maybe that'll suffice.
It's a start.
Everybody's different, right? I agree. It's not something that's been historically part of your career planning, is to have a public profile and show that you know what you know. But isn't that what your resume is? Is demonstrating that you know something, and that's what a certification is showing that you, in theory, somebody's judged you as having those skills. What if you just publish it and demonstrate that you have those skills? That's another way of doing the same thing. And perhaps for some people, I'm far less stressful than a certification.
So I guess I want to ask a related question. Is you were talking about, you know, if you're a lawyer and have certain qualifications, in particular, you sit on the bar and you pass the bar exam, or if you are a medical doctor and you have a license to practice medicine, there are obvious field retorts that can be taken upon you if you violate either the ethics or standards of operations for those respective fields. Either you lose your license or you have your engineering stamp revoked or whatever the punitive actions may be. Do any of you feel that that should or should not exist in IT? That there should be some, you lose your IT card if you insert major violation here?
So I mean, with current programs, the only major violation that'll get you kicked out is cheating on the certification programs themselves, which I think is a completely valid reason to lose your certificate.
But that's not going to prevent you from jumping to a different industry certification from a different vendor, passing that and continuing.
And if what you're saying is the scarlet letter because you made a mistake, or just you're bad at your job, but you're able to pass exams, you know, I mean, that's unfortunate, but that's what the interview process is
for. And I think there's also, there's a very much a difference between a doctor, engineer, lawyer. They also have real money or lives or, you know, on betting on what they do. When what, you is know, that, look at, is look that at really IT. A bit
different though?
No, IT, if the network stops working or the computers break, everybody goes, oh, that's pretty bad, but nobody dies. Or businesses don't halt running or, you know, nobody wants to pay IT professionals at the same way that they do with doctors and lawyers or, you know, people who build bridges. And that also means liability. So that means you have to start assuming real personal liability if something goes wrong. So a civil engineer, if they fail to, or in a civil engineering firm, and the civil engineers can suffer both commercial and personal liability if they fail to design sufficiently. Are you ready for that?
I guess to look at it another way, I'm not sure that that sort of program would solve a problem that we have right now.
Look, the reality in IT is it doesn't actually work. It barely works at all. And now you're telling me you want to put quality standards on top of a technology that comes with zero guarantees. Right? You can't. There's nothing in technology that's stable enough or reliable enough that you could bet your entire career on, because none of it works. It works in spite of your best efforts.
That's true. And I'm not saying, you know, oh, well, this network interface went down, you should totally just be excommunicated from doing all IT. You know, I'm talking if you publish a file share with no credentials and forwarded X to the internet, you should probably be penalized for doing something like that.
I mean, it's a resume updating event, right? But, you know, punitive, you know, I think it requires a certain level of intent, right? Like ignorance isn't intent.
And again, a doctor spends 6 years full-time studying to get their certification and then 2 years in training in a hospital plus another 2 years usually. It takes 10 years for them to graduate or complete to be certified. Your average IT professional spends 6 to 8 weeks learning how to be a so-called competent professional. There's a world of difference between the two. Law's the same. You go and do a 4-year degree and then you do a 3-year internship journey status, whatever it is. Civil engineering, any of the engineering degrees, you do your 4-year degree, you pass out of a recognized institution, recognized by a globally recognized body, and then you do years before you become a responsible engineer who is actually taking responsibility for signing off something. In IT, a CCDE or a CCIE or a JNCIE or any of those programs, you do 800 hours, give or take, 20 weeks, maybe 25 weeks of work to pass. Let's say it takes you 30, 40 weeks of effort. That's barely a year's education to get through the so-called expert level certifications that we put together.
Except I would argue that's not zero to 40 weeks, right? It's kind of 40 weeks for once you commit to that sort of program. You have to have a base of knowledge underneath that. I don't know anybody who's gotten their CCIE 40 weeks after they first heard about networking.
Yeah, and I don't want to be pedantic because you did say the average, but you know I can say personally, you know I enrolled in a 7-month 40-hour a week training course for the United States Army Signal Center, you know, and you know, my kids are in college, they're doing 17 hours a week, you know, for a semester. So how many years of equivalent college, you know, that 28 weeks of, you know, butt in the seat.
Yep, that's 1,100
for
40
hours at a time.
Yep, that's 1,100 hours.
You know, and then
you spend more time doing signals training than you've ever done in official training in IT, being an IT professional.
I've gone to boot camps year after year and continuing education and you know, of course, on the job experience. It's not. I'm not trying to pitch myself as the average, but I am saying that I don't know if the calculation that you're making is necessarily fair.
Yeah, my point is even when I was working in the field, I was still spending 10 to 15 hours a week in the textbooks, keeping up to date, reading RFCs, reading, you know, trying to stay, go to courses, go to I would easily spend 1,000 hours a year keeping up to date. It's just not done in an official format.
Yeah, I mean,
I think we can agree.
Yeah.
So that's what sets good engineers apart, good network engineers apart from those that.
But the only way you can demonstrate that competency, in my opinion, isn't on your resume. And you can write on your resume, you know, 10 hours a week in study and textbooks and blah, blah, blah. The only way you can demonstrate that is in a blog.
Or a GitHub. Certification.
Yeah, but even a certification is, you know, I don't believe the value of certifications is what it used to be. I think you'd be better off doing self-study and then demonstrating that in a blog and having a much wider range of skills, thinking about market trends, deep research on a particular technology and writing that up and publishing it.
You know, Greg, I love and respect your podcast and you as a professional. You're purporting to have a blog. How long have you had your blog?
2008.
You remind me a little bit of a Robert Heinlein novel I read once where, I forget the name of it, where a nation state decided to change the rules of engagement after they had amassed a storage of something that would benefit from the new rules.
Yeah. Well, my point is the thing that I've learned from having a blog is that that's what I learned, the process of writing and publishing, and then when I would write something, and that time when you press publish, you really take, and you're writing something, you take a lot of care to get it right. And I learned from the writing process, and then I learned from the thinking process and double-checking it before I published it.
Do you think, though, Greg, your blog would have gotten where it is today if you hadn't put the base of certifications underneath it? Like, would
anybody can start a blog and get noticed. Google will find you. You don't have to have a certification. You just have to have good. Just have to write something and then keep writing. It doesn't even have to be.
If the content's good enough, Jeremy, the legitimacy of the content will speak for itself. You don't have to back that on your about page by saying you're a CCIE or CCDE necessarily. I don't think it hurts, of course, but and often certifications, maybe they give you fuel, things to talk about, things that pop in your head that you wouldn't have known about if you hadn't gone through the cert. But I don't think if the content is well researched and good enough and you know, demonstrably useful, having the cert or not doesn't validate or invalidate the content itself, I guess.
Yeah. What you're saying is if the content's not wrong and it doesn't follow you for a long period of time.
Yeah, but if it's wrong, you can delete it. It doesn't have to stay out there. Like if you write something up, if you know, like I've got plenty of blog posts which say, this is my current understanding, and then da 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 da, and then somebody would come along and comment on the bottom and say, you're wrong here. And I go, okay, I would delete the post, or most often I would pull it, then rewrite it until it was correct, and then republish it. Hmm. It's not like you get your job right every day of the week either, right? Just
right, but that's not visible to the public necessarily, unless the failure is big enough, I suppose.
So it's interesting, Mike, because what you're saying is also what slowed me down on putting my blog together years and years ago. And it's the fear of being wrong, right? Or the fear of sort of the permanence of making a mistake in public.
Occasionally I've made mistakes in blog posts. People let me know in a comment either I forgot something that was fairly important I should have included, or I got some detail wrong. You just fix it and you put an edit at the bottom. Hey, I originally said this, and thanking this is such a person for bringing this to my attention, and I fixed it.
Yeah. Yep, and that's
it is an ego thing to get over, but it's fine. No one actually cares that much.
Yep, and that's kind of where I was going to follow up. It's that, you know, once you get over that fear, you realize it's kind of unfounded. So
and people reading your content don't want you to be wrong. They want to help you, or they either want to learn, and it does take a bit of a lesson to learn that there's plenty of grammar Nazis or idiots out there. But guess what? They're also the people, your colleagues, who want to make your life miserable and sad. You know? Mm. That's well, not new.
Make no mistake, it's not the fear of sharing ideas that keeps me from a blog. I do have a personal security, social engineering aspect that gives me a great deal of pause, but mostly it's just time. Yeah, I'm operations, support for, an enterprise network that does market clearing. I'm not saying that there's any life or death, but you talk about real money. If the network goes down, then
other companies
can't process marketed transactions.
But, you know, 800 hours spent completing your CCIE wasn't easy either, or for a failed attempt. And if you had a blog post which blogged everything that you learned during your CCIE process, at least you'd have something to show for it.
That's fair.
Like, there's nothing like why spend hundreds of hours facing down a certification for a one-off win, when you could blog for the same for 10 hours a week, you could write a blog post, and at the end of it, even if you did, you would have a whole body of evidence about something you don't, and even if you went and failed the exam, you would still have something to prove that you'd studied all that and learned all that. Whereas if you go and attempt an exam, this applies for CCNA, CCNB, if you go and do it, and you've got nothing to show that you did all the prep, but you failed anyway because you're bad at taking tests, well then, what have you got to show for it? Nothing. You feel miserable and sad, and you're actually just probably berating yourself because you're a loser. Whereas if you'd done all the work and you had, 100 blog posts about what you'd learned along the way, you could say, well, look, I did try, and here's all my work. I show you. Here's it. Much more credibility. Well, I think it's probably time to wrap this up. Thanks. Any final points? Jeremy, any final points you want to make?
Yeah, that pretty much covered it.
What about you, Mike? Any closing thoughts?
No, I really enjoyed the experience. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. What about you, Chris? Any closing thoughts that we should wrap up before we take the exit?
No, I just encourage everybody out there to keeping yourselves educated.
Okay. Anybody want to plug their social media? Mike, do you want to tell? You're not on social media, so maybe people can find you on LinkedIn. We'll put a link to you in the show notes. Mike, do you want to tell anybody where you are on the internet, or you just want to say on LinkedIn?
No, I was going to say if we need to communicate, I typically reach out to someone else. So,
Jeremy, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, I've got a blog at jeremyphillibin.com, and I'm on Twitter at jphillibin.
As always, this has been Packet Pushers. Thanks so much for listening. It's been a hell of a fine conversation, perhaps one of our longest shows in a very long time. Thanks very much to our three guests for joining us today, Mike Fryer, Chris Kluker, and Jeremy Philibin. It's so great to have them talking and for me not to have to and generally just sit in the background. And Ethan, thanks for being there, buddy.
Yeah, you're welcome, my friend. Yep. Always here. I kept it quiet for most of the show because there was so much talking going on.
I know, it was fantastic.
Hey, let it run.
Let them go. It's time for them to shine. So, as always, you can find this and many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can tweet to us as @packetpushers, follow us on LinkedIn, and rate us on Apple Podcasts. If you could do that, that would be fantastic. If you head over to Packet Pushers, you can also find at packetpushers.net/the-newsletters. We have three other newsletters that you can subscribe to. It'd be great if you could sign up for those, because we tell you all sorts of crazy stuff about what's happening out there. It's more than just podcasts, it's also writing. As always, remember, last and never ever least, too much technology would never be enough.